Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 493.
This week on the podcast, brainworms. Somebody in the presidential race has finally admitted to having them.
And a plea to have fun with the Donald von Schützenpanz trial.
Plus some political advice. Dog killing equals bad. Hope that helped.
And Bidenomics. We hardly knew ya.
Plus, to the surprise of nobody but Nancy Pelosi, Trump-loving Democrat Henry Cuellar is also a criminal.
And at least there's still some good news out in the world. Katara Rivage is out of retirement.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey y'all, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Wow.
It's been a while.
Is this thing on?
And we don't know because we can't remember how we used to record this. The tech is mysterious.
You know, when you have a world traveler as one of your co-hosts of this podcast.
That's right. A one-time world traveler like Lila Nordstrom in your midst. Mm-hmm. You just never know what's going to happen.
That's right.
I feel like before that, you were moving. I got sick.
Oh, yeah.
It's been nonstop chaos. It hasn't been one of the great winters.
So settle in for a six-hour podcast where we catch you up on news dating all the way back to February.
That's right.
No, we're not doing that.
We're not doing that. We're just assuming you read the news. And also, here's the other thing. I feel like it's been hard to motivate us to do this podcast because this presidential election sucks.
Ugh.
Like, everything that's going on blows. And the parts of a presidential election cycle that we love the most have been tossed out the window in this cycle. There are not fun candidates. The fun candidates we have are boring and scary because they're both old and also we've been hearing about them for decades.
Yeah.
Like, the lack of sort of it's like we don't know who's going to win, but also nobody should win. So, like, we're not excited about the outcome because it's not like there's a potential win where we're like, we did it, America.
No.
All the options are bad. Some of them are worse than others.
Right.
But all of them are bad.
Yeah.
And no one can even explain how they might be good because I think a frequent thing, I was just in upstate New York with my parents. We were dealing with the local Democrats there doing some stuff with the local Democrats there. Uh-huh. And if you said to them that you were frustrated with Joe Biden, concerned about Joe Biden, anything about Joe Biden, they would say to you, but democracy's on the line.
Sure. And I was like, Democrats notably doing democracy right now.
Like, first of all, Democrats doing the opposite of democracy, left, right, and center. Don't lecture me about democracy when Adam Schiff is the man that I have to decide whether to vote for Senate. But also, and more importantly, tell me
crushing fascism right now.
Crushing fascism.
Right, which is what we're supposed to be scared of.
Exactly. Tell me one thing that is a real thing that I can look forward to in a Joe Biden presidency. Like, this is just a note to anyone campaigning for anyone in the world.
Yeah.
We
can't even look forward to Bidenomics anymore.
Exactly.
We'll get to that in a little bit.
But, like, if you are not... You're not going to move votes with scare tactics because, A, how many elections have we been hearing that democracy is on the line for? Like, all of the last decade has been the democracy on the line decade. Yeah. But also, you cannot get people motivated to vote for someone without telling them what they're voting for. You can just get them motivated to not vote.
I know.
Like, the Democrats are very specifically making me worry I don't want to vote.
Yeah.
And, they're the ones charged with making me show up. I'm not going to show up for Republicans. You don't have to worry about that. But, like, am I going to show up for Democrats? Yeah. Nobody knows. That's the question we're answering here. So, like,
if I know whether I am
campaigning for
Democrats. The answer is no.
No, right. No, exactly. Like,
that's... I've decided. In case, that might be an update since we last recorded this podcast.
Right. But, I mean, like, imagine you're you right now, having just declared that. And I'm a Democrat.
Yeah.
And then I'm here to tell you that you should vote for Joe Biden. Just imagine that reality.
I would tell you to... Take your best sales pitch, put it together, think long and hard about it.
And throw it out a window.
And then tell it to somebody who is not me.
Right. But I mean, like, can you imagine what me saying to you that the one reason you should vote for Joe Biden is because democracy is on the line would do to your brain right now?
Well, I would.
It makes you want to throw a chair. Like, there's no positive outcome to that argument. Tell me something about, I don't know, student loan. Like, tell me about an issue I care about and what he's going to do about that or what he has done about that.
No.
You're still not going to convince me, but you might convince someone else.
But well, I mean, like, I feel like
you have to have a thing. You have to campaign on an issue.
I agree. And this has long been a problem of theirs and specifically even his, I would say.
Yes.
You know, because there's a lot of issues that they like to scare you about. And I get it, right? They're going to run on abortion.
Right.
And I get that. That makes sense. Run on that. But, you know, if you ask one follow-up question to him, there's he has no answer, right?
I mean, no, exactly.
Because like, if you're wanting to say like, I can understand like he maybe it would be a good idea. I have advocated for him to do this. I think it might be his only winning strategy is to like make this about the courts, right?
Right.
But like when you get into abortion access, it's like, what is his solution? Does he want to get rid of the filibuster so he can expand the courts? No, he doesn't want to do that.
No.
Does he want to, you know, there's a laundry list of things that we went over when the Dobbs decision came down,
right,
about abortion that we, you'll remember, Democrats, a lot of them, including even Elizabeth Warren, who has, you know, carried the bag for him more than I've even wanted her to, I think,
yeah,
a lot of times, came out and said, here's what you need to do, and listed a whole laundry list of things, and she wanted him to be more upset than he was.
Yeah.
Right? And like,
well, he's not upset. He's personally pro-life.
And he's unwilling to do any,
yeah,
of them. And that's the same thing, you know, they love to scare up, you know, oh, the Republicans want to, you know, cut your Social Security and Medicaid, but not a plan to be had by any Democrat to expand any of those things.
No, exactly.
Right? You know, or even to really protect them.
No.
In any sort of meaningful way.
And
there's a whole host of things where it's just sort of like, you can tell me how, everybody knows how bad the Republicans are. We get it.
Right.
We're not delusional about,
no, exactly,
it. It's like you and I were talking before this podcast. It's like, there's no chance that we're going to like, decide that we don't like Joe Biden and be like, well, I guess it's time to vote for Donald Trump now. Like,
and everyone is viewing it as an either or thing where they're like, well, see, they're either creating a false equivalency between not voting for a Democrat and voting for Donald Trump, which in an electoral college system, sadly, is not the case.
Yeah.
I mean, I say sadly because one thing that we have been told over and over in blue states as voters is that our votes don't count. So to then be mad,
yeah,
that these people aren't taking their presidential vote seriously when it's like, well, their vote doesn't get to count.
Right.
So like, don't be mad that people won't take their vote seriously after, like, I think the bigger problem, and my mother has been pointing this out to people as well, is that you can't say that you're the party that wants to save democracy when you have won the popular vote in basically every election but one of the last 20 years,
sure,
and you're unwilling, and you've only gotten to be the president like twice.
Right.
Like, if you are willing to accept the results of the 2016 election as the real results, then like, don't be out here telling voters that their vote counts.
Sure.
It absolutely doesn't. My vote didn't,
yeah,
count because I, you know, if you're a voter who voted for Democrats in 2016, then your vote,
yeah,
actually didn't count because you did, in fact, elect someone else to be the president, then got to be the president.
Yeah, right.
So, like, you know, don't be out here telling me that you're saving democracy. But I think just in general, like, instead of being reactive to us and being mad at us, think to yourself, what could I say that would proactively change someone's mind who has just said what we and Brent just said?
Right.
Don't worry about, like, this is, we're not, I'm not saying this to, like, tempt everyone to like hate me for, you know, having for, or to encourage everyone to think of me as like a dumb person who hasn't thought of things. Like,
right.
Don't worry about me. I am thinking things through.
Yeah.
But think to yourself, if I want to be part of a dialogue that actually results in people like these people I just heard showing up for Joe Biden,
yeah,
what do I need to say to them? It can't, and we have just told you, don't try to scare us with democracy because,
right,
this party doesn't care if more of us show up and vote for them. They still don't fight for us. So,
right,
like, what can you say that's like, should we have enough people to overcome that obstacle?
Yeah.
Here's what we're going to do. Here's what we have done. Here's what we've been doing behind the scenes that you might not remember because we've been getting bad press. Come up with a real laundry list of things,
yeah,
that are like actual campaign items.
Yeah.
Not bullshit. And then tell,
right,
me that, you know, I should show,
right,
up for Joe Biden. That's,
yeah,
all.
Don't tell me.
I mean, no, but I'm just saying, like, at this stage in the election,
no, I get it. I
presume,
yeah,
votes,
no, I
are
get
swayable,
it,
but the votes are,
well,
swayable,
right,
between
should,
not showing,
well, that,
up and showing,
well, that's
up.
That's what I was going to say. Yes. Be thinking of those ideas,
yeah,
and be telling them to someone who might listen to them.
Yeah. No, and it's like, you have,
it's just a waste of breath for me.
But I'm going to say, listen, you have 6 months to convince me if you want. Like, I'm,
sure,
not going to sit here and say that I have made, I declared last time that I wasn't going to vote for Joe Biden, and I did.
And
did.
Did
I have,
know,
a panic attack at the polls, and do I regret doing it? Sure. But the point is, you have 6 months to change my mind, even if I've said I've made up my decision. The,
yeah,
you, what you can't do is back into the same position that you've been in and then be mad that the same argument isn't moving me.
Yeah.
Like, I've already told you that argument doesn't work. Move on. Try something,
right,
new.
Yeah.
In any case, that's my little spiel about everything that I've heard from Democrats recently,
yeah,
which is all the wrong things.
Yeah.
But let's talk about some of the other presidential contenders in the race. Most notably, I think, Mr. Brainworm himself, RFK
Jr.
Oh, my
Jr. gosh.
The most important story of the last week/month/year,
yeah,
is not anything having to do with any real candidates for president. It's the fact that there are now headlines in every major paper announcing RFK Jr.'s brainworms.
I know.
And brainworms is
bad. That's not what you want when you're running for president.
It's not what you want when you're running for president. It's something that we have accused people of having in the past, realizing that some of them did have those brainworms.
Well, I know.
I mean, I feel a little bad because I feel like we've jokingly accused him of having brainworms before.
On some level, could he turn this into being good for him as an actual reason
that he is
that his brain isn't working compared to the other two who seemingly just...
Right.
Or acting like they have brainworms, but don't.
Right. That's true.
He actually had the brainworms.
A worm has eaten part of RFK Jr.'s brain.
Right.
And this is like the way that this came to us, because this brainworm situation is not new. It occurred in 2010.
Oh, yeah.
Or that's at least when it was discovered.
Yeah.
He was having issues in 2010 where he was like, you know, having memory loss and foggy brain fog and things like that. He was very tired. People thought he might have a brain tumor. And listen, he's a Kennedy, so he has to watch out for his health.
Because
the Kennedys have been taken down by far less. Uh-huh. And some of the Kennedys have specifically been taken down by brain tumors.
Yeah,
yes, because Ed Kennedy died of a brain tumor. So, you know, you got to be careful as a Kennedy.
Yep.
So he goes to a doctor. You know, he had Ed Kennedy's doctor to consult. So he goes to a doctor and they're like, yeah, you might have a brain tumor. It's pretty bad. Yeah, I mean, whatever. And then goes to a bunch of doctors, is scheduled for surgery. And then finally a doctor calls and is like, I'm pretty sure you have a brain worm. And it turns out this is a common issue in the developing world. Where you get like essentially like pork tapeworms in your brain. And he had evidence that he had a dead parasite in his head that had eaten part of his brain. And listen, that tracks perfectly. That's exactly what someone in his situation, I guess, would expect to find. I don't know. It's just so funny because he's so ridiculous already. And, like, to have someone with that level of ridiculousness...
I know.
...who came out of left field... We already have two ridiculous people running for president. Neither of them have functioning brains. To have this guy come out of nowhere... why is he even polling in any space in the election? Nobody knows. He's, like, anti... You know, he's, like, vaguely pro and anti-science because he's an anti-vaxxer but an environmentalist. Like, it's hard to know where he comes down...
Yeah.
And because of that, he's a bit of an anomaly, but I feel like that kind of, this explains a lot because it's like, you know, you don't have to be following any sort of like specific logical path as a person whose part of their brain is missing.
That's so true.
Like his brain is, you know, it's not firing in the normal order.
No.
In any case, what a hilarious series of headlines. And like, sorry for your brainworms, but also like that was a real gift, I think, given where we are in the rest of the presidential cycle.
Well, I do feel like that's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's a real thing that he had.
Yes.
Obviously.
That is a serious problem in the developing world.
And sure.
A serious problem if you're him.
But it's just like, you know, we already had questions about him.
It's like, and it's already a joke that's been made about him.
I know. But I do think that it is actually like really bad for him in the sense that like I think that there are people who are thinking about voting for him.
Yeah.
Whether it be a protest vote, whether there be weird pockets of people who agree with him on some specific things or for whatever. But I mean, like, that's not what you're looking for in the candidate that you are going out to support.
Certainly not. You are absolutely not hoping that the main headline about them and the main thing that we will all take away from this cycle about RFK Jr. is brainworms. Because if you ask me in 20 years what I remember about RFK Jr., the answer is going to be brainworms.
100%.
There's not any... I'm going to probably have forgotten...
And you don't want to be the person that has voted for that.
Exactly. Like, I'm going to have forgotten he was anti-vax. I'm going to have forgotten he was an environmental lawyer. Like, there are going to be a lot of things I'm going to have forgotten about him. I'm never going to forget that he had brainworms.
No.
Never in my life.
No.
So. And then... Like, in other sort of semi-presidential news, we've got the Trump-New York trial going on. And that's been a real gift of a trial.
I know. And I have not been paying attention to it.
Oh, it's been glorious.
I know.
You're missing, first of all, some great television.
Maybe this is the one that... This is probably the one that I should have been paying attention to.
Yeah. Oh, this is the best one, for sure. Because the other ones are going to be, like, more serious.
Yeah, because that's what... And they're also not going to happen.
And they're also not going to happen.
By the way, they keep getting pushed or whatever. Yeah. You know, we're waiting on the Supreme Court. We're waiting on the...
When we watch them in 2054, they're going to be great, but we're going to be on, you know,
but this,
in a retirement
Because
home.
What I have been looking for from these, or not looking for from these, as you know, is that, like, my level of ability to watch them is...
Yeah, it's low.
So low.
Yeah.
And I just, as I've said, I'm like, just somebody tell me when... he's in prison. But, like, in this trial, we're getting, like, you know, Donald von Schützenpants getting read into the record. And that's really what...
That's fine.
That's what I want.
No, and that's... Yeah. I said that to Brent when this trial started, because we had this conversation. And then there was a bit on The Daily Show that perfectly encompassed this conversation Brent and I had, like, that night.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because
I forgot about that.
Brent was like, just let me know when he's in jail. And I was like, this is going to be the greatest television of all of our lifetimes. And
I know,
you...
But I wish there was...
Are missing. I know, I wish it was
camera.
I know. It would be nice if it was televised. Yeah. But, like, you have chosen to, like, not participate in the greatest moment of Trump television. This is the best season of Trump television that we'll ever have. And you've chosen not to participate in that after years of participating. And
maybe I should just be doing my own research.
Do your own. Right.
Because what I can't do is, like, turn on CNN and have the panel of 74 different people
giving
silliness. Every angle of and reciting everything that happened and showing, like, that's what I can't have.
Of course not. Nobody wants to watch that. But what I think has been so special about this is the fun has been shining through even that horror.
Sure.
Like, that's what, so Jon Stewart was taking a position very similar to Brent Thornburg. In that they were being old fuddy-duddies who don't love fun. And both of them were taking the position, one on air for a bit and one because he was being serious, that, you know, just like, wake us up when Donald Trump's in jail. The man just needs to pay for his crimes. And then Jessica Williams, a.k.a. Lila Nordstrom, got on the screen and were like, this is fun, though. Stop hating fun. Why do you hate fun? Because I feel like the most important thing to take away from this time in Trump history is not, like, listen, is Trump scary? Of course. But you're not going to beat the man by being afraid of him. You're going to beat him by making fun of him.
That's true.
The more that we can have fun with the Trump thing, the less serious he is of a person, the less of a threat he is.
Yeah.
So, like, to give him the power to not make you enjoy this wonderful moment in American television history is giving him, I think, a little bit too much power.
Fair.
Like, okay. I feel like with every one of these trials... Do not, this is about the narrative arc. It's not about the details. It's not about, like, what is the, like, whether he's actually going to be convicted. I don't even care if he's convicted. Like, I don't care about any of this.
Yeah.
This is what I care. I care that he's not the president again. I'm thinking to myself, as a serious matter, how do I make him not the president again? And then as a non-serious matter, I'm thinking to myself, what is fun about the moment before we find out if he's the president or not? How can I make sure that I still have joy in these dark times?
Sure.
And, like, this is a way... to have joy in these dark times.
Yeah.
And this is a way to also bring back the fun of early Trump.
Yeah.
Remember when Trump was fun because it was, like, not a serious threat and he was just doing the Trump Stakes press conference and being, like, a great television personality and we didn't have to worry about... And I think everyone got... Like, first of all, Democrats are very unfun, so they became the kind of people who were like, we can't take anything he does. We have to take everything he does seriously now because he's a real threat. And it's like, no, you don't. First of all, he's nothing more than a TV personality. Don't give him more power than that.
Did you see
be entertained by him if you want.
Did you see his Silence of the Lambs bit that I sent you?
Yes.
Did you watch the video that I sent?
Yes.
Hannibal Lecter.
He's
very
doing
good guy.
He's doing great TV right now. And I mean TV in the broad media sense, not in the specific television sense, but it's all the same.
Yeah.
You know? If you can have fun with him on TikTok, then, like, you are engaging with Donald Trump in the right way. So, like, don't miss this because you're mad about the fact that too many unfun people are taking this seriously.
Right. Yeah.
Like, let this be the thing.
Yeah.
Don't listen to, you know, the Fox News take on this. But maybe that's probably very funny, if I'm being honest. But in any case, because we've had some great moments in this. First of all, Hope Hicks has testified. Stormy Daniels has testified. Michael Cohen has testified. Like, will be testifying.
Will,
believe.
Right, tomorrow.
He is, he's testifying tomorrow.
Monday,
yeah. Like, this is great, you know. A great moment for, like, I think, this is a great moment for the Trump narrative.
Sure. Yes. No, I agree.
It's not a great moment for, like, the American narrative, but it's a great moment for the Trump narrative.
We're here.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, what are you going to do?
What do we do?
Yeah. Right. But, yeah, we have Michael Cohen's nickname, Donald von Schützenpants,
so
being entered into the record. We have him being held in contempt over and over and over again.
Jay Tapper was very excited to get to read von Schützenpants because once it had been
entered
into the record, because I think
they got to read it out loud.
Something else.
Yeah.
He got to say it. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Seeing that kind of joy on the face of Jake Tapper about reading something this dumb was also its own kind of form of entertainment.
Yeah.
And take this while you can, because Florida's going to be postponed forever.
Right.
Georgia's way slowed down. Like, the rest of these trials, and Georgia's the goal, because Georgia is televised.
So I know.
So Georgia's the one we care about the most.
Yeah, what was it? I think that the appeals court is going to take up the Trump's requests to remove Fani Willis
right.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's
no. So there's like
that's already been decided, but now it just has to move through the whole appeals process. So like,
exactly. So that's going to take forever, and that's the real goal, because that's going to be the greatest moment of television in American history. But until we get there, take the wins where you can get them.
Yeah.
Don't be unfun.
Yeah. Fair.
And everything surrounding the Trump presidency of late has actually been getting funnier as well.
Oh yeah.
Because also his VP selection process has fallen apart. He was pretty we were pretty certain that Christy Noem was
on the list.
Was on the short list.
I think he's now claiming that she wasn't.
She was his top choice,
and
we know that.
That's what you would do, yeah. I guess, if you were
And
him.
The reason that he's had to do that is because, as you probably know, she has just published a memoir in which she has admitted to killing her dog for no particular reason, just because she didn't like her dog. And like, also, she had a story about meeting Kim Jong-un that turned out to be fake.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She made up a meeting with Macron, with Emmanuel Macron.
Oh, yeah, that was hilarious, because the French government weighed in, because there's an anecdote in there about like how she had a meeting planned with him while she was there, and then he said something that she perceived to be pro-Hamas.
Yeah.
And so she canceled the meeting, and the other day the French government was like, we don't know her.
Yeah.
That didn't happen at all.
Exactly.
So I think she just made a lot of this up. Yeah. It seems like, I mean, the dog story is definitely true, because she's doubled down on it, which seems weird because she's been cagey about those other two stories.
Right.
Where it's like,
exactly,
maybe she could have just tried to play off the dog story as being something that she made up to sound powerful. Right. Like some sort of like allegory for like, you know, not being afraid to say the wrong thing. Because that's what she was trying to say. Like that was the supposed moral of that story, of that very amoral story.
Right.
Was that, you know, she's not afraid to say the thing, right?
Right, no, exactly. The worst part is she doubled down on the dog killing thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And the goat. Wasn't there a goat involved?
Oh, yeah, she killed a goat, too. But the dog one was, I think, the worst one, because
obviously
everybody, even Mitt Romney knew that that was bad.
Right, I was going to say,
Mitt
who
transported his dog in the car, roof rack, Romney. Like, she literally doubled down by being like, that's life on the farm.
That's
and then
right.
It's like farmers had to be like, right. No, it's not.
No, it's
people,
not.
We aren't murdering our pets.
Our pets.
Like,
no.
Dogs on the farm. And this was like a 14-month-old dog that just wasn't vibing with her, basically.
Right. I love
that. She just like shot it in the head in a field.
Right. In a gravel pit.
In a gravel pit. Sorry, I forgot. It was a gravel pit, yeah.
That was being watched by construction workers. Also, I love that detail of that story, right?
No, I mean, The whole story is so insane, and the fact that instead of being like, wow, that was misconstrued by the, you know, whatever, she was like, no, that's what you do.
That's what you do. Yeah, you go on a fucking shooting spree.
Right. Like, no, you don't. So in any case.
And this, by the way, confirms what I have said from the beginning about gun owners.
Yeah. They just want to murder things.
Desperate to shoot anything.
They're trying to murder people.
People, animals, dogs, goats, humans, they just want to fire that gun into something that's gonna fucking die.
They sure do. Yeah. And that, and the fact that she didn't even recognize that that's not how you talk about dog murder in polite society. Like, if you are part of the community of people that are dog murdering, you keep that shit to yourself.
Yeah, I know.
You do not double down. You say, you know, my ghostwriter fucked me over. He totally misconstrued a story where this dog had 7 kinds of cancer and a limp and the most humane choice. And so we brought it to a vet. And, you know, like, you make something up.
Yeah.
You lie. You don't admit to being a fucking dog murderer. That's politics 101.
I was going
to
say, it really did. It was shocking because, listen, I was curious when I first read about this how this was going to shake out. Because obviously, I'm assuming that the large majority of Americans are against dog murder, right?
Yes.
But she was also, you know, has been auditioning to be the VP of a candidate who has claimed that he could go out and murder a bunch of people in the street and still have people vote for him. So I was like, there was part of me who was like, oh, well, now she gets to be the Veep.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Audition passed.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. No, so, I think it took other people reacting for Donald Trump's team to be like, oh, this does disqualify
her. It's been interesting to me to see the morals of this play out with people who have openly claimed to not have any.
Yeah. No.
I guess dog murder is...
That's the line.
That's the line.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, if human murder's not the line, at least let's not murder dogs. You know,
guess.
Like, but there's also like another weird thing that's going on that's bad news for their campaign, because so the Indiana primary happened a few days ago.
Yeah.
And Nikki Haley got 22% of the vote. And she's not running anymore, by the way, you guys.
No,
she's just like a person in America.
She dropped out in March, like months ago. And I think she also got like 17% in Pennsylvania and in Arizona and like battle, like some battleground states.
She's been
like
slowly sort of creeping up in the election results in like some important states. And I was looking into kind of where these votes were coming from because I was curious, because the thing is, it doesn't, listen, if people in deep red wherever are voting for Nikki Haley, then like whatever, they're probably not, it's probably not a threat to the Trump campaign. But these votes are coming from suburban strongholds. Mm. So these votes are coming from pretty, from the kinds of neighborhoods that make up the margin that gives you the victory.
Yeah, supposedly.
So it's actually
like, we heard a lot in 2020 about what was going on in suburbia and who they were voting for. Right, because a lot of them had voted for Donald Trump.
Exactly.
And then whether they were now going to be voting for Joe Biden. We had to hear too much about suburbia, really, for my taste.
Yeah.
If we're being honest. But
Much more than I think is relevant. I don't
feel
like they should have that kind of an outside say in the election, but here we are. It's just, it's bad news for the Trump campaign that these votes are coming from these, you know, from suburban strongholds that they're going to be relying on in some of these states to kind of make up margins. The margins are going to be close.
Well, and this is what this, it makes me so mad that Republicans are doing this and not Democrats.
Because, I know.
Because what this is, what that 22% is, it's a flare. They are sending up a flare to Donald Trump that he can listen to or not listen to. Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
no,
the choice, I suppose, is his because he already has the, you know, he's going to be the nominee. We know that. Right.
Right.
But like, that's a sign to him that he needs to do something, a sign to the RNC that he shouldn't be the candidate. If they can somehow make him not be. And this is what we have been asking Democrats to do. Right. This is what we put on our voting guide.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, no, exactly.
You don't have to. They are voting for Nikki Haley, even knowing that she is not running and that Donald Trump already has the delegates to be the president.
Yeah.
This is what we were asking people to do in our voting guide because we were
this
like,
sends a message.
It sends a message. And then, like, you know, we know that there are at least 22% of Democrats who don't want Joe Biden to be the candidate, but they voted for him anyway.
Yeah.
And Democrats love all the time to talk about sort of like the cult of Trump and the cult of this and, you know, like Republicans are like just falling in line behind. No, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
That's what Democrats are doing.
Yeah. When I think also like.
Why did Dean Phillips never once get 22% of the vote?
Right. Yeah. Because it's not like people are aligned with Nikki Haley in the Republican
Party
either.
Nobody likes her. Not one of these people gives a shit about Nikki Haley. She was the other person on the ballot line.
And most of them will probably vote for Donald Trump. In the general?
Some of them.
But some of them won't.
Yeah.
And the people that won't are the voters that actually matter because they are winnable. Whereas some of the voters who aren't voting in the primary
aren't. And they told you where they were.
Yeah.
And that's what I was wanting people to do. Well, we were wanting people to do, right?
Exactly.
Like, this is, the primary specifically is really, that's your one shot.
Yeah. You got to tell the candidate where you are so they can find you in the general.
Right? Like, don't go around telling your friends that you think Joe Biden is a piece of shit and then vote for him in the primary.
Right.
What are you doing?
What good does that do
anyone?
You've
done no good for anyone.
No, exactly.
Even him.
No.
Really.
It
because
not
how else is he supposed to know that he's supposed to change something?
Exactly. It does not help his campaign figure out how to reach out to their own voters. It does not help them, you know, figure out strategic messaging. It doesn't help them do anything other than lose an election, which is what their goal, I guess, usually is.
But like now, if you're a thinking Republican, which I understand might be an oxymoron, you're thinking to yourself, we've got problems in Indiana. We got problems in Pennsylvania. We got problems in Arizona. We got problems in suburbia. What the fuck are we going to do? And you put together a plan to fix it. I don't know that they'll be able to do that necessarily. But when Joe Biden is getting none of those messages.
Yeah, no, exactly.
How is he supposed to know? Like, it would have behooved his candidacy for you to vote for Dean Phillips in the primary.
Yeah.
Because then he would have known.
He had to find you.
He would have had data then.
Yeah.
Right? Like, well, these candidates love to have way too much data to
do. He would have had to go find you in the general.
So I just, it's annoying to me that, like, bozos in Indiana understand the assignment and Democrats in California don't understand the assignment.
Yeah. Well, that, I think, speaks to where we sort of find ourselves right now. First of all, to why Republican voters have become this sort of a much more confusing voting bloc than they used to be. Like, I think there are a lot of people that I think we wonder how we lost as Democrats, especially with, you know, suburban voters like this are a good example.
Sure.
You know, these are the kind of voters we traditionally think of as swing voters. And I feel like we've like pretty much lost a lot of those voters and or we have let them subsume the party to the extent that we've lost the left, you know, we've lost everyone else.
Yeah,
like, I feel like the sort of the opportunity for dissent within the party actually is like exists more strongly in the Republican Party right now than it does in the Democratic Party on the voter level, not on the political level. I don't, what they're doing on the political level is a mess.
Right.
But I mean, in terms of like how we're able to like sort of, in terms of the levels of desperation people are willing to go to in order to like, you know, send a message to the party.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
Republicans
yeah, yeah.
are out here desperately trying to send a message to the party because their party's not listening either. It's not, you know, the RNC is not listening.
No, I know.
But, like, they're organizing to try to figure out how to send a message to the party. And I feel, I don't understand why Democrats are being just complacent enough that we're not willing to even send a message.
No.
And I think people are misunderstanding. That's what I don't like about the Save Democracy, you know, thing, because it makes it seem like the only goal is such a big goal. And as my mother also pointed out, you know, to people last week, when I heard her talking about this, she was like, democracy doesn't feed anyone. Democracy doesn't put a roof over your head. Saving democracy means nothing if we can't accomplish anything with democracy.
Yeah.
So like,
we talk about that on this. I mean, she's absolutely right.
No,
we've talked
about
that before. Like, just save democracy for fucking what?
For what? Exactly. So like, I feel like if we, like the fact that we're all willing to allow our like priorities to be subsumed by the idea of saving democracy, which doesn't actually mean anything specifically, is part of why we're in this situation where we're not able to like at least mount like a lame challenge to...
Right. What if you saved
Joe
my
Biden
ability
candidacy?
To buy groceries?
Exactly. Like, I don't think that there's like a disagreement across parties that groceries are too expensive right now.
Right.
Just because Joe Biden is the president doesn't mean I don't know inflation when I see it.
Right,
you know, like, and it's like, okay, if can we like leave room for people who are mad about inflation in the Democratic Party, and can they then send a message to Joe Biden that they too are mad about inflation, or do those people have to vote for Republicans because they're mad about inflation?
That's the
question you have to ask yourself. Yeah. Like, have we left room for people to like dissent within the party so that we can figure out where our priorities lie, or do those people have to exist outside of the party?
I don't know.
Of the party, I guess.
We'll see. I guess.
I mean, it doesn't matter. We're not doing Bidenomics anymore anyway, so it doesn't matter what happens to the economy.
Yeah, they dropped that.
Yeah.
They started it back in like June of 2003 and they used it for like the rest of the year, essentially, but they've stopped.
Well, here's a few
congressional
reasons.
Democrats really never got on board with it, but the White House hilariously is saying that they've recently concluded that too many Americans don't know what Bidenomics meant.
Well, it's hard to know when the economy is in the shithole that it's in to understand what they mean by Bidenomics in a positive sense. I would contend
they don't understand what's wrong with the economy is the problem.
Yeah. I would also contend that a minor problem that they ran into with Bidenomics was that they didn't even buy Bidenomics.com. So Americans for Prosperity owns Bidenomics.com, and it's a website trashing Bidenomics, and it is the second Google result you get if you Google Bidenomics. So maybe the reason no one knew what Bidenomics was is because if you Google Bidenomics, you get a website from Americans for Prosperity explaining why Biden isn't doing well for the economy.
Right. But I mean... this is like warning signs all over the place. The fact that they are like not wanting to tie themselves to this
their
economy,
own economy
to their own economy, right? And that they initially were like trying to run on it. There was a poll in the New York Times just this month that had 79% of people describing the economy as either fair or poor. Only 21% of people said excellent or good. So like you can imagine why they don't want this economy named named after them.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
But like it's shocking to me that like this should be alarm bells to them, and maybe it is, right? I mean, who was it, Bill Clinton, that was it's the economy stupid?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was him, right?
Yeah.
So like that is bad, but like the reason that they started the whole Bidenomics thing, because they were like, you know, the unemployment rate is low and job creation has been good and there's been this and they've done infrastructure spending and all of these things, and they were things that like were real,
right?
You know, but like to our earlier point, it's just sort of like inflation is still high. Housing costs are still out of control. Wages are stagnant. Like, you can talk about, like, the job market and you can talk about spending money on infrastructure, but, like, people literally can't afford food and shelter.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, you're not going to get a good rating on the economy when asked by the New York Times in a poll. So... Probably smart to drop Bidenomics.
The term economy, the economy as we think of it is fake, as we've described repeatedly on this podcast.
Sure.
And this is like a perfect example of the disconnect between economics economy and like real life economy.
That's what I was going to say. Like people's economics are real.
Yeah, right.
The system
like,
is
the amount of
garbage,
money you have to spend on items is real.
Right.
But what's not real is the vague indicators that describe how your experience with the economy is going. Because obviously those vague indicators aren't reflective of anyone's actual real experiences, because And also, this is as much a messaging problem as anything else, where it's like, you know, I remember it was when the egg pricing thing fell, you know, out of control. And they, you know, and then it kind of stabilized. And so they were like, I don't know why people are still upset about this. The price went back down. And it's like, it actually doesn't matter what the real prices of things are. It matters how people feel about it.
Right.
If the messaging is not getting to people that the economy is good and that they can afford things, it doesn't matter if it's true that they can.
Well,
Obama learned this the hard way because he tried to put secret economic reforms into bills so that people wouldn't feel the difference. And it turned out that that doesn't win you a political victory because no one knows it's happening.
People need to know.
And people are vaguely dissatisfied with their lives in general.
Yeah.
And so people need to know what you've done. But also, if the price of eggs went up at all, don't expect that people know it went down.
Yeah.
They're mad about the time it went up still. Like,
yeah, I agree. And also, like, this brings me to another thing that, like, that annoys me about him when I was talking earlier about how they'll, like, complain about a thing and then have no solution to it. Because, like, this is a thing that I think if he got it right, could actually be a winning message for him, because he recently did like an otherwise disastrous interview with Aaron Burnett. I don't know if you've seen any clips of this, but he was talking about how a lot of this inflation is due to corporate greed and that they're trying to get at that right now, which I don't believe. But he's absolutely 100% right about that. And we have talked on this podcast for the entirety of it about how corporate greed is probably a thing that you could win on, and that Republicans would vote for Democrats on, and Democrats would vote for Republicans on. It's like the one thing all parties agree is happening.
Right.
Most of them aren't handling it well. But I don't even believe him on that, because what is he going to do about corporate greed? Nothing.
No.
Because, and the reason is that he, to get at corporate greed, you really have to sort of like get at capitalism.
Yeah. Which he,
which he loves. Right. Nobody loves capitalism more than Joe Biden. He'll tell you about it.
Yeah.
He loves to start every campaign speech in 2020
with his love of capitalism.
With his declaration that he's a capitalist, just to remind you that he wasn't Bernie Sanders. So there's no way he's going to do anything about that. He's going to wander around all over the country, doddering around, talking about corporate greed, and not do one single solitary thing to counter corporate greed.
That's right. Yeah.
He's just going to tell you that it's bad.
Right. Right, which is like...
And that's why your things cost too much.
That is
true. Well, sir,
true.
What are you going to do so the thing doesn't cost so much? Well, nothing.
No.
But it's corporate greed.
I'm
but
helpless.
It's not my fault.
Well, it's like also, it's the kind of thing where he is acting like he's helpless in the face of a force that can be regulated by the U.S. government. Like, I
100%.
Think Democrats are doing this up and, you know, up left, right, and center, where they'll like, you know, it's like gun violence, where they're like, yeah, it is bad. And you're like, okay, well, we're not the ones empowered to fix that, though, are we? But you are. So, like, actually, the fact that you're frustrated about how you can't figure out how to fix it is not our problem.
Yeah.
You just actually need to figure out how to fix it,
right.
And then come to us when you fixed it. Like, don't commiserate with us about how you can't get your job done. We're paying your salary to do this job.
Right.
If the president can't help control corporate greed, who can?
Yeah.
Then maybe we do need a new system of government. Because apparently democracy can't control the main thing that is a threat to our lives. So, like, maybe there's a system that can. I don't know.
Oh boy,
it's a mess. Also, this is a conversation for another time, because we just don't have time or energy to go into it today, but his response to these student protests on college campuses has been among the dumber campaign your choices a person could make. Like, this is the election where young people become a majority of the electorate. The 2024 is the year. Millennials and Gen Z are now a majority of the electorate. What plan is this right now?
Yeah.
To just be like, don't worry, protesters will never shift my opinion of this critical this issue where I'm supporting a genocide. Like, get out of here.
I think that, and we don't have to get into it any further. You're right. I was just going to say that I think that this is a hill that he's willing to die on, actually.
Yeah.
Which is so bizarre to me, but if you look at his entire history on this issue since he's been in the Senate, I think that it's more important to him to be consistent on this insane issue and continue to support Israel throughout whatever it is that they
choose any choices
to do,
they make, whether they're good
that,
or bad.
Like that if that's the reason that he loses the election, then he'll sleep at night.
I guess so. It's just so wild to me. Like, putting aside the foreign policy piece of it, the like actual like what should our military funding go to piece of it, telling a bunch of college students who have been brutalized on their own college campuses that their protests, which has historically been valorized as something that shifts U.S. culture and policy,
yeah,
that we've been taught our whole lives. It's like, why does the civil rights movement happen? It happens on college campuses. Sure. You know, like, you know, why does the Vietnam War end? It happens on college campuses. Right. Like, you know, this is something that we have, that is a part of our tradition. To get up and tell young people in a moment like this, on any issue,
yeah,
that their protests are meaningless,
yeah,
is just dumb.
I know.
It's dumb.
It's dumb.
It's not even like, beyond the actual policy piece of it, it's dumb.
Yeah. Well, and also,
as a domestic
like,
policy choice, it's
and,
dumb.
And the other thing is that, like, I mean, God bless all of these students, but, like, when anybody asks me what I think of the student protests, I'm like, I don't understand why they're not burning it down.
I know.
Like,
right. Because, they could be doing worse.
And I only say that just because of the response from Biden and the police forces, yeah, and stuff like that. I was listening to a podcast about some of the about what happened at Kent State specifically.
Oh, yeah.
They literally started fires in a bunch of buildings that they took over and then, yeah, cut the hoses of the fire trucks when they showed up.
Right.
I mean, like, they're not doing any of this.
No.
And, like, you know, I don't necessarily need the feds after me saying that they should.
Right.
But, like,
no, but it's like,
but the idea that, like, we have
these
to
have
sort
been
of
quite
like,
tame.
They have been so
and
tame.
Also, as I want to remind everyone, this is something that I only started thinking about after the raid at Columbia. Every building that is taken in a protest right now has been taken using tactics that we specifically taught students because they were likely to face acts of gun violence on their campus,
sure,
on their schools.
Yeah.
So, like, when you think about why students know how to take a building right now, like, I didn't know how to take a building when I was a student protester. Sure. I went to tons of student protests. I was, yeah, out here. I did walkouts. I did all sorts of shit. I never took a building. I wouldn't have known how. Right. But, like, if you are wondering why these students are, first of all, this is an Occupy-style protest. You know, they're camping, yeah, on a lawn because this is a style of protest that, yeah, we now, you know, that we know works. But also, the reason they know how to barricade themselves in a fucking building is because we taught them how, because we wouldn't regulate gun violence. Like,
right,
don't be shocked then that they are using those tactics as protest tactics.
Yeah.
You taught them to them.
Yeah.
In any case, that makes me mad just as a general thing because it's unfair. It's unfair that people are mad at a bunch of kids for, yeah, for a thing that terrorized them when they were, for, you,
right,
know, having to deal with terror when they were younger.
Yeah. Right.
And it's like, get out of here.
Yeah.
In any case, we'll talk about that issue in a different podcast because we don't have the time. We have to cover 2 months worth of news today. But here's some other people running for things news that you might need.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders just declared he's running for re-election. He's too old. Sorry about it.
I know.
And I love Bernie Sanders.
I know. I love Bernie Sanders too.
And I would really...
And I think I have even joked about voting for the ghost of Bernie,
yeah,
Sanders before.
Yeah. But it's like people are getting too old.
People are
And
too
listen,
old.
I get that everyone's, yeah, setting the wrong example for everyone.
And also, do they still have that Republican governor?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, friends.
Right.
I'm assuming he gets to pick the replacement.
Right.
Right? When,
yeah,
he dies in the next 6 years. I mean, he'll be 90. I think he's 84.
Yeah. No, I know. It's no,
right,
it's, we gotta be playing long games. And I would say also, it's annoying only because, like, if there's one person who has done the most to build the bench for the Democratic Party, I think it's Bernie Sanders in this moment where a ton of members of Congress only are in Congress right now because Bernie Sanders ran for president.
Sure.
Like there's and they got their start on his campaign. Like, I think he is somebody who does understand the value of a next generation. So it's,
yeah,
just like, understand it for yourself now.
I agree.
Anyway, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the greatest hypocrisy the Democratic Party has ever told.
Listen, you might not care about this story, but I do. So here it is.
No, you should care about this story.
I mean, we talked about this a lot. We talked about Henry Cuellar a lot,
yeah,
in 2020 and in 2022. Specifically in 2022, because at that point, well, no, in 2020, we talked, regardless, we've been talking about him for a long time.
Also,
I was going to delineate which election we talked about him more in.
He's been in office forever.
He's
a pro-life Democrat.
Right. I think we talked a lot about him in 2020 because he had a primary.
Jessica Cisneros has,
right,
run twice, I think.
Twice, 20 and 22.
Yeah.
But in 2020, I think we were really mad because we were like, well, Henry Cuellar is a person who voted like quite literally 80% of the time with Donald Trump.
Right.
He is literally the last pro-life Democrat who is in Congress. So he,
yeah,
barely beat Jessica Cisneros, who is a very qualified woman. She's a Latina woman. She is an immigration lawyer.
Yeah.
And people liked her.
Yeah.
She made it to a runoff both times. And in 2022, people were really pissed, or people on the left were really pissed anyway, because he was, as we mentioned, the last pro-life Democrat. And Nancy Pelosi was out propping him up as an incumbent, all the while trying to get people to vote based solely on abortion access. Yeah. Right, reproductive rights. So it was insane to us that she was choosing to do that. And what was doubly insane was that she chose to do that after his home was raided by the fucking FBI.
Yeah.
And she is quoted, there was a whole long expose in Vanity Fair about this whole sort of relationship, which I would ask you to read because it's fascinating. But she was quoted as saying, I'm supporting Henry Cuellar. He's a valued member of our caucus. The FBI has said he's not under investigation.
Right.
Well, guess what, friends?
He was.
He was, and
now he's been indicted.
And now he's been indicted.
So, that's
sitting member of Congress.
So,
Henry Cuellar, supported by Nancy Pelosi. And this is not even really about him. It's more about her, really. Yeah. And it's more about the D-Trip and the DNC and leadership and their relationship to incumbents and continuing to try and just gain power to do nothing. Like, what are they doing?
Yeah, what do they need the power for?
When I saw that headline that he had been indicted, I was of course he was.
Yeah.
Because he's been under investigation by the FBI. Yeah. But B, fuck these people who carry the bag for him while they knew that this was going on and they knew that he was pro-life and we already had the Dobbs decision.
Yeah.
And they propped this guy up over a well-qualified woman. A
popular candidate,
candidate who barely, I think she lost by literally 500 votes in 2020.
Yeah. And in those kind of races, having the D-Trip support and money means a lot. Oh,
totally.
You know, I mean, she was running with way fewer resources than he was 100%. Running with. 100%. And maybe that's because he was accepting bribes from foreign entities.
But even NARAL came out against him and supported Cisneros, and Pelosi still didn't support Cisneros. She still came to Cuellar's defense.
Yeah. No, it's, I think, an example of sort of the Democratic strategy losing its way because it's not really underpinned by principles. It's just underpinned by power.
100%.
And this creates...
That they don't know how to use once they have.
They don't know how to use once they have. And this creates the impression that they're ineffective.
Right.
And then they are ineffective. Right. And then they then want us to vote for them for president so that they can, I guess, be ineffective as president. I don't know. It's very disappointing.
Yeah. It just struck me as a prime example of what is wrong with specific people, the entire apparatus, the party. It's just this is why people are untrustworthy of them. It's why it means a lot, the story, I guess. It's just it's representative of a lot of issues.
Yeah.
No. Which is why I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, it's...
And now we can move on if you want.
I guess. I mean, this is I feel a perfect example of why it becomes difficult for Democrats to defend themselves when they... And this, by the way, this makes it hard for regular people on the ground to go out to voters in their communities. Putting aside the sort of a frustrating hypocritical power piece of this, when Democrats act in ways like this, I mean, I feel sort of similarly about them supporting Adam Schiff in a primary that had three Democrats who were all sitting members of Congress.
Right.
I feel like when they do things like this, it becomes very hard for regular people who just want to volunteer for the Democrats to go out and knock doors for them.
Yeah, 100%.
It trickles down in ways that are disastrous for their vote. And to then, they're very much of the blame the voter variety of candidate where they're if you don't vote for us, then it's your fault that blah, blah, blah happens. And it's this is an example of things being your fault.
Yeah.
Because if you make it so that it is not morally possible for people to support, D-Trip candidates because this is how the D-Trip acts or whatever it is, then you have made your own bed. It's not the voter's responsibility to hold the bag for you. You're asking us now to do what Nancy Pelosi did for, Cuellar, which is we shouldn't also be having to hold the bag for you guys.
Yeah. And also, just before we leave the story, actually, because I said that we can move on, but let's not really quickly, just because I want to tell you what the indictment is about. Also, because two people, two of his associates have already pled guilty. One of them could face 20 years. What they said in their indictment that they released last week is that he and his wife accepted $600,000 in bribes from foreign entities, including a Mexican bank and an oil and gas company controlled by Azerbaijan. Friends.
Not. That's Manafort-style bullshit.
But that's what I was about to say. That's Donald Trump level. These are the things that, we've talked about. He's just he's a Russian pawn or whatever it is that we're saying about people.
This makes the Menendez indictment look kind of lame.
Taking bribes from a foreign oil company. Guys.
Yeah. That's anyway. It's not great.
It's not great.
So yeah, I feel like this actually bleeds pretty seamlessly into our next story.
It truly does. This is the Democrats suck portion of the podcast.
Yes, this is all we learned from this last from this last few months where we weren't recording is that we're still mad at the Democrats.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, this is an ongoing. It's been a while since we've recorded, but it's a continuation.
It's an ongoing story. Okay. Yeah. This is mostly a story about how desperate everyone is to make sure war funding is safe.
Deeply.
Like we've brought you stories like this before because it seems like both Democrats and Republicans will do almost anything to save our ability to fund wars. Too bad you don't have health care. That's too bad for you. But right. We have got to get some money to Ukraine.
Yeah,
that's exactly, all that matters.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And so. As you probably know, Marjorie Taylor Greene introduced an attempt to oust Mike Johnson.
Sure.
It was only a matter of time before something like this happened because the Republican Party is in shambles and the caucus doesn't like any of each other.
Right. And it was and the reason that she did it was because that he moved forward with passing this $95 billion aid package to Ukraine and Israel and various other places. But it was the Ukraine portion that she is real hopped up on. The Republicans are very confused about their war funding because they would like you to think that they are anti-war. And even, you know, she's taking pictures with Medea Benjamin. People have been confused about what's going on with Marjorie Taylor Greene and everything. She's happy to send the money to everywhere else in the aid package, but she just doesn't want Ukraine to have it.
Well, because she doesn't want to go against Russia. She's a Russian pawn. Oh, right. You always have to remember that. Exactly. You know?
Yeah. So anyway, so she filed this motion and she got 11 Republicans to vote with her to bring it to the floor.
Right.
Now, the only reason that that number is notable is because that is the exact same number that voted with her to bring the vote against McCarthy to the floor.
Well, it's the same people.
It's the same people. Now, the difference was with the McCarthy instance, along with those 11 people, were every single Democrat.
Right. Yeah.
In this instance, it was the opposite.
That's right.
The Democrats decided to save Mike Johnson.
I know.
For the specific reason that she voted to oust him, which was because they allowed him, or he allowed them, basically, to push this aid package through.
Yeah.
So they said to him specifically, and I'm sure they said this to him, you know, privately, we will save your speakership if you pass this aid package.
Yeah.
Which is so bonkers, because this is a man who is one of the most conservative members of Congress.
Yeah.
He is one of the leading election deniers.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would think that if they were going to decide to save his job, that they would have said, okay, well, you have to bring to vote, like you said, like, let's get people health care.
Right.
Let's pass a minimum wage increase that we can send to the Senate. Right. No, all they wanted was to make sure that $26 billion got to Israel.
Well, you know what? The fact that that is more of an emergency for them than your, like, ability to live as an American is, I feel like, a good example of why
it's going to be
hard. Why the college kids are mad and why it's going to be hard to get people to show up in November.
I agree.
Because if this is the only thing that is time sensitive to them, but the fact that we have, like, systems in place where, like, American people's lives are not safe because of policy choices that we're making.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when you find out what it would actually cost to, like, solve homelessness in America.
Oh, right.
And it's like, it's like less than what we just sent to Ukraine.
Yeah.
Or is around, maybe it's like $32 billion instead of $26 billion right, or something like that. It's like a roughly equivalent amount.
Yeah.
And the fact that Americans without homes is not an emergency worth pushing a vote for, but like this is a good example of like how
effective
everyone's
priorities
are. We
gotta keep the wars going, friends. Right. We gotta keep the war, the proxy war against Russia and the genocide against the Palestinians.
That's our first priority. Everything else is impossible.
Yeah.
How would we do it? We don't have any way of doing it. We're praying with you for it. But you know.
And what's so insane about this, too, is because, like, Biden has just recently, in the last couple of days, you know, I think been wanting to get some credit from people for saying that they're going to potentially stop sending some arms to Israel if they go forward with this big Rafah invasion, which, by the way, they've already done.
I was going to say, they've already committed war crimes. That's been acknowledged by...
Oh, right. I was going to say, the State Department issued that thing on a Friday night that, like, Israel may or may not have used American weapons to do international war crimes. But anyway, you know, it's hard to give Biden any credit for maybe not sending additional arms when he just sent them $26 billion.
Right. Yeah, maybe...
they're going to be able to sufficiently buy their own arms whether we send them more or not.
Exactly.
Because you just gave them the money to do so.
Exactly.
So it's like...
Yeah, no, it's disappointing.
But it's just so bizarre that, like, Mike Johnson.
I know.
The man who was behind some of the legal challenges to the election.
Yeah.
That were pushed by some of these crazy people like Rudy Giuliani. Mike Johnson was involved in those.
Well, and I think
now we're going to keep him in power as the speaker up through the election, by the way, friends.
They don't want to challenge any... it's so important to them to keep systems humming.
Right. That's exactly right. You know, it's the good government problem.
It's the good government problem. Yeah.
They need somebody to be able to keep passing laws.
Right. But like the only laws they pass are these kind of laws.
Yeah.
So it's like, to me, I'm like, don't be functional then. It's like, right. If this is all you're up to, then don't be functional. Yeah, I agree. Be dysfunctional to the extent that we can create some greater change that like allows things to actually happen. Yeah. And it's not that I don't understand the desire to have like a functional government to whatever degree we're capable of keeping it functioning. I don't understand why this has, their standards have fallen so dramatically that we are now in a place where the government is not actually good. And they are still kind of hanging on to the devil we know problem, you know?
Right.
It's like the devil we know right now might not be better than the devil we don't know. And also, right. You should just try anything.
Right.
Like, so in any case, there's some good news out there, which is that George Santos's alter ego, Katara Revanche, is out of retirement for cameos.
Who isn't real, though, because he never did drag.
He never did drag, except for that he is about to commence doing drag.
Right. Well, I think he has. I've seen some of the clips.
Oh, you saw some of the clips already? Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah. So that's... Yeah. At least a positive thing to end on.
Yeah.
As we...
I know. Well, and it was because he was going to... He was bringing Katara out of retirement because it was going to give the proceeds of the cameos to a couple nonprofits. And I was like, those nonprofits...
Not seeing a dime.
Not one single dime.
No. And
never seen
and it. And hopefully they know better than to expect.
No. A dime. Well, I'm sure they were probably surprised to hear that he was going to be giving them money.
Right.
And will not be surprised to know when it doesn't happen. Right.
I mean, they'll remain surprised.
They know who he is.
Yeah, exactly.
He's nonprofits. So.
In any case, that's the news for this week. We'll be back on a slightly more regular schedule now that things are evening out.
Yeah.
You know? So we should be able to report on real news next week. Yes. If there is any and we're not too
there
mad.
There will be.
Also, I guess go out and look at the Northern Lights. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't... What is that?
Well, I'm worried that the world's ending because it seems like a lot of like once in a lifetime things are happening at once. We just had a full eclipse.
I know.
That was supposed to be a historic event, except for that we'd had another one like 2 years ago. Like,
I can't with the eclipses.
No. So they're happening constantly.
Constantly. That's right.
So in any case, I guess go out and watch them if you want.
Sure.
And if you don't feel bad about it. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.